This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Propax Gold with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years. With a 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to take up a subject that is, I think, integral to natural medicine, which is the subject of hydration. And with us is the author of a very, very successful book on that subject. The book is entitled Quench. What a great title. She's my good colleague, Dr. Dana Cohen. Dr. Cohen and I have worked together in the past. We've served on the board of the American Academy for Advancement in Medicine. We are both practicing here in New York. And she, after a very successful run with the initial hardbound edition of Quench, it's now available in paperback. So it's even more accessible to you, and I recommend it very highly. Dana, it's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine for a reprise.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah. So what's been happening with the book? I mean, the book has been really a runaway bestseller. Very, very successful, translated into multiple languages, lots of sales. And you've done lots and lots of social media and lots of interviews around the subject because really, I think it's a very, very important subject that hasn't been tackled adequately in the past.
Yeah, it's been like a slow burn, actually. So people are discovering it and sort like groups of little niches of people. So like, you know, it's interesting that the people that are really most excited about it are estheticians because they know better than most that, you know, hydrating skin comes from within. And it's the first step, you know, you need to do to have your skin look the best. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm getting so much feedback from estheticians, body workers, physical therapists, and massage therapists. And, you know, it's just, it's a very interesting run. It has legs, so to speak. And people are, it's just the you know, the science is, it's evergreen, you know, and, you and I know, and most doctors know that hydrating properly is the first step we all must take in treating and preventing chronic illness, you know, period. And so that's what's happening.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, from the standpoint of conventional medicine, I think that this is not a subject that is highly regarded. And they tend to poo-poo the notion that you need to drink a lot because, well, I think the conventional opinion on this is that you should obey your thirst impulses. And, you know, as long as you're not thirsty, you know, you're probably going to be okay. And there's all this folklore out there. It's kind of urban legend that you should drink, you know, whatever, 8 ounces of water a day. And, of course, you know, we also want to talk about individualizing our recommendations because different stroke for different folks too, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm here to say that they may be right. It's not necessarily about drinking more and more water, but they're wrong in not addressing it because people don't know what it feels like to be properly hydrated. And that means taking into account what we're eating. You know, are we eating hydrating foods? Are we paying attention to those signs in our body that we need to better hydrate? You know, so and the other interesting thing what recently has been coming up is now people are talking about drinking a gallon of water a day, which is 16 ounces of glasses. This has become a little bit of a trend.
Yeah. Well, there's actually a term for it in psychiatry. It's called dipsomania, which means people who are like compulsively drinking water, and that can be detrimental. You know, you can. Right? There is this whole notion of overhydration. Can you talk to that?
Yeah. And in fact, I see it way more often than I ever imagined. And I'm curious to know if you do in your patients. Mm-hmm. At least once a week do I see, at least, and probably more than that, do I see a low sodium and a low chloride on patients' blood work.
Yeah.
And when I ask the patient how much water you're drinking, like, oh, I drink a ton of water.
Yeah.
And so they're actually having, you know, real repercussions. They're flushing out all their electrolytes because they're drinking so much water, bulk water, plain water, and not replenishing those electrolytes. So I see it way more often than I was ever, you know, that we were ever taught. Like, oh, it's really rare. You don't see it. I see it way more than I thought.
And the profile of that might be a younger, a young woman, you know, perhaps a svelte young woman, very health conscious, maybe somebody trying to control their appetite by, you know, simply drinking a lot. Do you see that trend at all in your practice?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of, most of my patients are 50 plus, most, maybe 90% of them. I see it. It doesn't even necessarily have to be that. I think people are just, I haven't really like looked at those kind of numbers, like who's doing this more often than most, patient population is doing it. But, I was going to say the polydipsia, what did you call it? Dipsomania.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily a psychological thing, but it could also have to do with people are exercising and thinking they're doing right by drinking, you know, so they're sweating a lot. So they're losing electrolytes via the sweat, and then they're just replenishing with plain water. And that's also, you're not giving yourself the electrolytes. So there's lots of reasons why it can be dangerous. It's not often dangerous unless it is, you know, dipsomania.
It can be dangerous. There are settings like in the marathon where people who sweat a lot during a marathon, you know, especially in hot weather, they just drink water, you know, because they're thirsty, but they don't get the electrolytes replaced. So they actually become depleted in electrolytes. And this actually can cause dangerous brain swelling. First, you experience a kind of a rubbery leg feeling, and, you know, then you can bonk and, you know, you crash into the emergency tent. And the treatment for that is they actually give you saline. They give you a salt solution to replete your blood. And people have died from this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's quite rare.
Yes.
And I'm saying this sort of subclinical overhydration where maybe people are getting lots, you know, they're thinking they're hydrating so well and they're doing it so right, yet their electrolytes are a little bit low, they're getting leg cramps, and they're constantly thirsty. They can't quench their thirst. Well, it's because they're not doing it right. So maybe consider adding some electrolytes or eating your water as opposed to drinking so much bulk water or plain water.
Mm-hmm. You know? And I think that's one of the insights from your book because, I mean, you write a book called Quench and it could be like 2 pages long. Like here's a picture of the number of glasses of water you need to drink. Thank you very much for buying my book. But there's a lot more to it than that, right?
If only it was so easy. I wish it were that easy. And I remember when I first started delving into the research, I was like, oh my goodness, what did I get myself into? This is way more complicated than I ever imagined. Water, the simplest molecule in the world that we all learned about, you know, the first molecule that we all learned about turns out to be incredibly complicated. And there's still scientists that are still like learning so much about it. And, you know, one of the big things in the book, if people haven't heard about it, is this other new phase of water that's been identified. So we know that water exists as liquid, ice, and vapor. And now there's a fourth phase based on the work of Dr. Gerald Pollack, which is like a structured water or a gel water. And it's a little different. And it's believed that that's the type of water that's found in our cells. And that's also the type of water that's found in nature. So the idea of eating or drinking more structured water by eating plants, and other things like, think about how desert plants hydrate, cactus and aloe and those kind of things. It's mostly via gel water. Tons of gel water are in those things. Mm-hmm. And that's just a better way of doing it, way more hydrating than plain bulk water alone.
So there are many water options out there. And, there are questions about, alkaline water. I get questions routinely about that. And then there's hydrogen water. I'm not really sure what some of those things are. Can you give us a brief introduction?
Yeah. So alkaline water is just that. It's water that has a higher pH than an acidic water, right? And there's all kinds of alkaline water. I think we've talked about this, and some people disagree with me, but I don't think that the research on that ever really panned out.
Thank you. I agree. I'm thinking, eat alkaline foods, but maybe, the little bit of alkalinity you get from the water is kind of inconsequential, no?
Yeah. But I will say, with that being said, and who knows why, I have patients that swear by it, that saying, I started drinking alkaline water and it's made a huge difference. I think it's probably made a difference because they're hydrating better.
Yeah. It encourages them to hydrate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Who knows? I'm not sure. So that's alkaline water. And once again, I'm not sure the research has panned out on that. Hydrogen water, on the other hand, is water that's been fortified with a hydrogen ion. And I do think that there's something to that.
Yeah.
The problem is you can't buy hydrogen water in a bottle. That hydrogen is long gone by the time it hits the bottle.
You have to generate it at home.
Yeah, there's these generators. I think there's a lot of research. I don't have a big background in the hydrogen water. I'm still sort of learning about it. I don't have a hydrogen machine at home. Mm-hmm. I will tell you though, I will say to you that if God forbid I had cancer, I would definitely be getting a hydrogen machine in my in my home. So I think there is some interesting research behind it.
What are the reputed benefits of that? I've read a little bit about it.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not an expert, so I don't want to give you false or wrong information.
Okay.
But there is some interesting anti-cancer benefits to it, and maybe antioxidant benefits. I'm definitely not read up on it right now, and I'm not the person to be speaking to.
And
there's a guy, Paul Botero. I don't know if you ever had him on your show. He's the guy to talk to.
Okay.
The guy is brilliant on it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, one of the things that I noticed is, it's wintertime as we do this. And some of you may be listening to this in June because we do this as a podcast, but it's, midwinter. And when I exercise, I sweat a lot less in the winter. I mean, I really got to work hard to build up a sweat because it's awfully cold. And I'm outside. Inside, yes. Outside, no. But then I realized that especially when I wear a mask or a muffler, sometimes the air is too cold, so I have to wear a gaiter around my mouth.
Yeah.
A lot of vapor comes out of me. And that's actually really interesting. It suggests that's how we dehydrate even in winter, because with every exhalation, there's vapor. That means moisture content is escaping our bodies, even if we're not sweating.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I think, I can't prove this, but I think that we're more dehydrated in the winter, especially in New York, where the radiators are going. And,
yeah, that too.
I know for myself, I wake up and my mouth is so dry in the morning. That never happens to me in the summer. It only happens in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I think our environments are more dehydrating, and not only that, people don't want to drink because it's so cold, or I think winter
is
as
pee.
Dehydrating.
It makes you want to pee.
Exactly. And you have to take down your pants and it's cold.
Yeah.
So I do think, I actually think winter is as, if not more dehydrating than summertime. I just do. And I think that's just a personal observation that I've seen. So I think it is as important, if not more important, to make sure you're hydrating properly in the winter months. But yeah, that's interesting. So breathing is a hydrating act. What you just said, people don't realize that moisture moves through breath as well as sweat, as well as peeing and pooing and all that stuff. So breathing is a hydrating act. One of the things I love, this little tip we give in the book, is to keep a little cup of hot tea at your desk and just breathe in those vapors. It's very moisturizing, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so then there's this thing, and, you know, everyone should drink 8 ounces of water a day, eight ounce glasses of water per day. And one of the myths that you seek to demolish in the book is this notion that there's a one size fits all.
Yeah. How can you tell a 5 foot tall woman to drink the same amount as a 6 foot two athlete who, you know, sweats all day? It makes no sense. I mean, that alone, it makes no sense. But the truth is, everybody has a different set point. And that 8 times 8, 8 8-ounce glasses of water, 64 ounces a day, it comes from nowhere. It's never been studied. And it's just different for everybody. There's you know, if you tied my arm around my back and I had to give you some number,
is there a formula begging for in it. Some way, shape, or form?
And the better formula, and we've talked about this before, is, you know, half your weight in ounces is a little bit better. It's still not everything, because are some people that may require more, and there are some people that may require less, depending on what you're eating and how well you're eating and what kind of environment you live in. What medications are you taking?
Yes.
You know, how much are you exercising? Everything plays into account here. And people have to know for themselves, what does it feel like to be properly hydrated? Are you feeling great? Are you moving fluidly? Are you headache free? Is your brain thinking clearly? You know, all of this. How's your energy? You know, and I say this a lot, and I just think it's a really good thing to think about, is that afternoon drop in energy, instead of reaching for sugar, which we're all told, oh, my blood sugar's dropping. I would say that probably most of the time it's not your blood sugar. It's this low grade dehydration. And if you learn to hydrate better, that's going to stop happening.
So what I think what you're saying is that thirst per se is not the major feedback mechanism to tell us sometimes whether we're dehydrated. You know, particularly if we have certain disease states or if we're older, on certain medication, that can distort our proper feedback about, you know, whether we really need to drink. So, is it a rule to maybe stay ahead of the game? You know, don't wait till you're, you know, parched, and maybe try and avert that ultimate state of dehydration.
Absolutely. If you're thirsty, you're too far gone. you're what I
past
I think
the point
overtly,
of no return.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there's absolute, but it's not good. It's not healthy. We want to stop that day in, day out dehydration. So you want to stave it off before you become thirsty. And like you said, we lose our ability to sense thirst as we get older, but even, so many of us, override our thirst mechanism. We learn to override it. We, you know, and that's a known thing. Like people who are workaholics who are sitting at their desk, like, no, I'm just gonna, you know, I can't get up to go drink, or I don't want to get up to go pee, you know, because that's gonna stop.
Well, that's the other thing is people who commute, people who, you know, shop in Midtown, especially now during the pandemic, they don't want to go into a public restroom. They intentionally dehydrate. In order to avert the need to go to the bathroom when they're out and about. And I think that sets people up for real dehydration.
Yeah, and our bodies learn to override it over time. You do that enough, and your body doesn't sense it as well as it used to. You know, like a diabetic senses low blood sugar. Mm-hmm. You know, you lose the ability to sense it. So thirst is just not a great, if you're feeling thirsty, then you need to do better. You know, if you're not feeling thirsty, it still doesn't mean you're not dehydrated or you're not this chronically low grade dehydration that we're talking about.
And you incorporate this in your practice. Can you give us some examples of where hydration has made a difference for some of your challenging cases?
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to my mind is the person who's overhydrating. So just because we talked about it a little bit earlier. So it's typically like usually a yogi, a person who does yoga, you know, like she's maybe even a teacher. And she's like, I drink so much water. I can't quench my thirst. I look at her labs, her sodium's a little bit low, her chloride's a little bit low. And the big thing is she gets muscle cramps. She's like, yeah, I get Charlie horses all the time at night. And so I teach her how to hydrate better. And it's not.
And of course, she's on a very low sodium diet, right? That's one of the hallmarks of virtue, right?
Because said sarcastically, sodium is bad for us, you know? So no, which is not true. If you're doing it right,
sodium actually really helps us retain more water, in effect, right?
Exactly. We need those electrolytes. It acts like a sponge. It holds it in, brings it into our cells. Yes, we need sodium. So that's an interest. I mean, that was a very specific case study of this person who was an athlete and had these leg cramps and was, you know, a little, didn't feel just 100%. Couldn't figure out why. Just changed the way she drank her water. And basically, I started her off by front-loading her water, which I like to do. That's what desert people do, meaning we give them a large amount of water, like 8 to 16 ounces first thing in the morning, add a little salt to it, maybe a squeeze of lemon for more minerals and electrolytes and taste. And so front-loading her water, eating more hydrating foods, and she found her thirst was quenched better. And she no longer got those leg cramps.
Very nice.
Yeah, easy. I can't tell you how many times I see that. That's quite often. Let me think of some other examples. I have a few autoimmune, like my Sjogren's patients, which is literally dry eyes, dry mouth. It's hard to say because there's other things that are involved.
Right.
So we're working on their gut.
You're not a one-note Charlie. It's not like, go see Dr. Dana Cohen and she's going to tell you to, you know, drink more water and have some more electrolytes. And that's what she does.
No.
You've got a whole armamentarium, an arsenal of natural therapies at your disposal. And you've also got the prescription pad. So, you know, like a conventional MD. So you're going to make use of all tools at your disposal. But hydration is front and center.
First and foremost, the first step you have to take before going on any diet, any lifestyle modification, you learn how to hydrate first and then go from there. And I can tell you, with my patients, so they come and see me the first visit, then I have 2 or 3 weeks in between where I'm waiting on their labs to come back. And in that first visit, I give them some tips on how to do this better. And so often they come back and saying, like, wow, I really notice a huge difference immediately, like doing nothing else. It's remarkable. It's easy.
It's a real paradigm shift, I think, to include that. All right, we're going to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. So when we return, we're going to talk about the science of dehydration. The book is Quench, now in paperback edition, available from all the normal sources. We're talking to the author, Dr. Dana Cohen. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.